And now, live from England, bringing you news and analysis that you won't find on the corporate and government mainstream media. It's the Wide Shut Webcast.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome along to another episode of the Wide Shut Webcast on FTP Radio. That's flippingthepyramid.co.uk, and my own website is wideshut.co.uk. As always, I'm your host, Keelan Balderson, and for the next hour or so, we're going to be listening to an interview I conducted on Friday on the Holly Greig case. It's a story that's swept the counterculture over the last few years. Everyone involved in alternative media and activism has heard of the Google Holly Greig campaign. And after dipping my toe in a couple of times, I've now decided that it's really time to look into this case and analyse it and have a look at the evidence and see where it takes us. And to really ask the big questions surrounding everything to do with the case. And the outcome of that might not be what some of you expect. Now, if you're new to the show, you can catch me first every week on Sundays at 8 p.m. UK time on flippingthepyramid.co.uk, and then shortly after that first airing, links are posted up on wideshut.co.uk in MP3 format. I'm on iTunes, there's a YouTube version, and you can use the Stitcher mobile application for your mobile devices as well. And if there's any other platform that you'd like to listen to the show on, please send me an email and I'll see if I can sort that out for you. But let's dive right into this then. Unless you're new to independent online media and that whole scene, most of you listening will probably know about the Holly Greig case. You can't really miss it, this horrific and emotive story that a Down syndrome lady, Holly Greig, from Scotland, was abused by a gang of paedophiles from the age of 6. It's alleged that this ring of abusers reaches the top levels of the Scottish establishment. Freemasons might be involved, there may be a satanic element, law firms, judges, politicians, just a horrible, horrible story. Everyone from David Icke to Brian Gerrish of the UK Column have talked about it, to abuse activist Bill Maloney, 9/11 truth activist Belinda McKenzie. It's been covered on the Alex Jones show. Palestinian newspapers have covered the story. There's been speaking tours, conferences. People have protested this en masse. There's been marches. Pretty much every element of the counterculture, whether it be media, activism, radio, and so on, every big name in the alternative media and the truth movement have at some point talked about this story. You can't miss it. And it has every element that we fear about the current hierarchical system that we live in. It confirms a lot of our fears about the system we live in. Our fears of corruption, cover-up, our fears of a broken justice system, a failing police force. And these fears are warranted, don't get me wrong. But this story has served to encompass all of that into one case, really. You know, the elite doing bad things behind closed doors, trying to shut people up about speaking the truth. But despite all of this, or actually perhaps because all of this, because it's such a perfect story, something that confirms a lot of people's worldview, one thing a lot of people haven't asked is it true? Is what Robert Greene and Anne Greig have been telling us about Holly, is it the truth? When something presses all the right buttons and fits our worldview, it's easy to accept it as truth. What's not easy is doing the actual legwork and finding the evidence. And if there isn't that evidence, it's even harder to concede that you've been wrong. The evidence claimed and put forward, to me, simply does not support what Robert Greene and Anne say about the case. And being a rational and fair person who really is seeking the truth and cares about the message that this loosely associated movement puts out there through the alternative media and activism and so on, I'm absolutely open to hearing the other side of the story. People have already emailed me saying, don't talk to these people. Well, I'm open to hearing every side of the story. I've got an open mind. I'm not closed-minded. I thought we were supposed to be seeking truth. Why would we shut one side out? And coming up after this quick break, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be talking to the other side. We're going to be talking to the Holly Greig hoax group. And joining me in that discussion will be two of the alleged abusers promoted by Robert Greene and Anne Greig. And the key word there is alleged. These two ladies have never been charged. They've never been forensically linked to any kind of abuse. They've never been named by anybody else as abusers. They've never been linked to anybody else that has been charged with abuse. They've simply been accused by Anne Greig and Robert Greene. So I'm more than happy to hear their side of the story. And I think this is going to massively change perceptions and prove a real wake-up call. As I say, this was recorded on Friday, so I'm going to add in a few extra clips and pause the interview to reflect at various points so people can really get an idea of the evidence and facts and some of the wider branches to this whole case. But don't go anywhere. Keep it locked here on the Wide Shut webcast with me, Keelan Balderson, because when we come back, we'll be hearing the other side of the Holly Greig case.
I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations of
the Great Depression, and I will cry every day. The result of Labour's economic management. Your child will have debts among the biggest anywhere at any time in history.
I want to get straight to the point. I'm a second-rate substitute Tony Blair.
Tell you why I want to be Prime Minister. It's because I want to live in a large, very warm house worth over £1 million.
We will never change. We are still the arrogant, callous, ruthless, wicked Tories. And you know what? We won't help anyone. I will skip across the playground and give the money to the rich, and we'd have a new world order.
Wideshirt.co.uk. If they won't tell you the truth, we will.
Flipping the pyramid.
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 .co.uk.
Flip the pyramid.
Turning that pyramid on its head.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flip the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flip the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid. .co.uk.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid.
.co.uk.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the whole paradigm of that hierarchical system on its head.
We're now joined on the line by members of the Holly Greig hoax group. The website is thehollygreigcoverup.net. We have with us Sarah McLeod, Rachel Keeley, two of the accused in the whole campaign. We've got Wynne Dragon Smith and Sylvia Major as well. So thank you all for coming on the show.
Hi, Keelan, and thanks very much for having us on your online broadcast.
Yes, thank you, Keelan. I'm Rachel, by the way.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Well, it's certainly not a nice subject to talk about, and I've generally kept out of it here on the Wide Shut webcast, but I think if the alternative media is going to have any credibility, not that we're all under the same umbrella, but I know there's a lot of crossover with my audience, so the least we can do is hear the other side of the story, and I'm not really comfortable just sitting on the fence anymore when I know listeners and people that I have known have been involved in the campaign to some degree. But yeah, so I thank you for coming on and sharing your side of the story today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, we can get to Wynne and Sylvia's specific story soon, but first, I'm just curious, Sarah and Rachel, what has your role been in the whole Holly Gray campaign, and how did you then decide that what Robert Greene and the others were saying might not be true? Because I was originally kind of on the bandwagon, you know, pasting a few things online, not really looking into it, but then I heard the interview with Manchester Radio Online where they had the BBC reporter on.
Mark Daly.
Yeah. And listening to that, I mean, Robert was incredibly evasive. He got quite frustrated. He didn't seem to be presenting any kind of evidence. The BBC guy seemed to be making the most sense out of all of them.
Mm.
And then I got an email from a guy called Greg Lance Watkins, I believe, and he was basically told me, you know, if you're gonna look into this story, you're gonna have to do some fact checking and so on. So since then, I've just completely left it alone. But I've got you guys on today. I'm just curious, Rachel and Sarah, how did you kind of, what was the process that you went through with all this?
We've got different stories, obviously, separate stories. So will I go first, Rachel?
Yes.
Okay, so I was involved with the campaign and I knew Robert, had met him many times and was involved in promoting the campaign to an extent. Mm. I wanted to, because this campaign was happening right on my doorstep, I live in the east of Scotland, I wanted to know what was going on. I was hearing things like Scotland is run by satanic, Masonic cabal, of paedophiles. I wanted to know what the actual facts of this case were. So I did befriend them and I made some videos with Robert, etc. Now, it was a sort of more of a gradual dawning for me that things didn't match up. One of the things that I found incredibly difficult to was just the way that Robert was cheated by Anne. Anne was very quite harsh on him, and that he wasn't doing a good enough job or whatever in her view. And so I never really agreed with that. I couldn't believe if they were working on this campaign together, I couldn't believe this was the way that she was cheating her. And that's probably maybe one of the first flags to me that all was not as it seemed. And then it went on and there was various holes in the story and it got worse. And I ended up, through Facebook mostly, coming together with other people that felt the same and really picking apart all the threads of this story and finding out the truth, it's been a really interesting journey. It's fascinating. But, so that's kind of half my story. But Rachel, what about yours?
I think it was basically the same. I became aware of the campaign via David Icke one evening, and that was it. I jumped on the bandwagon. I listened to the videos that were being put out, the initial ones by Robert and Anne. And at the time, I was, this needs to be sorted out. This is absolutely horrendous. So I joined and got stuck in with, as you say, the leafleting, emailing. And it wasn't very long. I think it was after I'd seen a couple of videos and it didn't quite match with other pieces of paperwork that sort of came my way. And I just started looking at this and I thought to myself, this isn't really adding up. So I did initially, it took about 3 or 4 weeks actually after I'd initially joined the campaign, and I realised that there was massive discrepancies, which made me dig even deeper and deeper. And in doing that, totally convinced me this is not right. So I tried to help other people see these discrepancies and, I was attacked and abused. So I sort of went undercover, hid away for a long, long time. But I have been doing a lot of research. I think I've seen every video that's ever been made, which is great because it gave me the chance to actually sit down and evaluate what Robert was saying. Now, Robert
we found out very quickly, wasn't doing any investigating whatsoever. He was just making wild accusations and wild claims right. that everybody was believing. And at first I thought it was me. I thought, well, is it just me? But no, no, so that's how I came on it. And then, of course, I met up with a few other friends, and we met Wynne and Sylvia, and it just really escalated from there. And since then, we've been given lots of other documents which totally prove that this is all, you know, false, a lie.
Sorry, and I just want to make that point again, Rachel, that if anybody questioned it even slightly, they were vilified, they were called paedophiles, etc., and really, like, some really harsh stuff coming down.
Frightening, actually. It started getting to the point where you were really frightened at these people. That, you know, nothing, they didn't ever read anything, they never wanted to hear the truth.
No.
You know, you try to point out things to them, say, but look, you know, this doesn't add up, read it. And you were attacked.
I think it's interesting, you brought up David Icke. I think it's interesting that somebody with such a high profile as his, and, you know, you have his website and all that, that he doesn't want to hear any of it. Like, even on the forums, it's all deleted. No,
I started 6 separate threads on his forums about the Holly Gregg hoax, asking questions, etc., and they were popular threads. They were all deleted, and I've been banned for life from his forums. Right. So that says, you know, and he will not talk about it. But I have seen that he has removed Holly Gregg stuff from his website now.
Right.
And I doubt he'll be talking about it at Wembley. But I still think he's got a few questions to answer about it.
Yes, I do.
Well, over to Wynne and Sylvia. Maybe we'll start with Wynne. It's my understanding you were a long-time friend of Anne Gregg, Holly's mother, and I guess you were friends with Holly as well. Why don't you briefly give us some background on that friendship?
Oh, we were really, really close friends for maybe 5-7 years. We went to Toronto together with Holly and her brother Greg. My husband and I visited them regularly, 2-3 times a week we were together. And it was a superb friendship. We were really close. And then things started to go awry once, I think it was after Roy died, and Anne became absolutely, totally weird insofar as she was claiming that her mother must have left money and where had it gone. And she was totally obsessed with this and working on the computer for hours and trying to get her solicitor struck off and writing to the Law Society. And it appeared that she'd been up really, really late, you know, working on the stuff all night. Mm. And obviously it had an effect on her mental health. And then the whole thing blew up and she was, you know, running outside in her nightie and disappearing. And you, myself and other friends were driving round the town looking for her. And things just got from bad to worse. And then, I think it was near 2000, Dennis came round and told me that he'd been picked up by the police on his way back to Aberdeen and accused by Anne of abusing Holly. And he was absolutely devastated.
Mm.
Now, that was back in 2000. The next thing I heard was 2010, I think it was Sylvia that told me that there was stuff on the internet.
Right.
And when I first viewed it, I thought it was quite hilarious. And until the penny dropped, and I thought, my God, this is on the World Wide Web. And I was absolutely mortified.
So were you distanced from Anne at that point?
Oh, at that stage, year 2000, she absolutely cut herself off from everyone, every friend. She just disappeared and nobody saw her. And, you know, what can you do? You can't force a friendship if she's decided to cut it dead. And she obviously thought everybody was against her. And I went with Dennis and the two of us took her to our GP. And when she came out, she said, look, he's one of them. It's against me. And she was totally, totally paranoid. Mm. So from then on, I didn't see her again. But I've kept, you know, good friends with Dennis all along.
Okay. But
then it was in the year 2010 that I started obsessing on the internet and seeing everything that was going on, and you know, it made me quite ill actually.
Mm.
And then, was it about April this year, I had contact from one of the Holly Greg Hoke's team, and since then it's been absolutely wonderful. They've been such a great help, and you know, through the connection, we've produced the Holly Greg website, the Holly Greg Hoax website.
Yeah.
And from then on, it's been super, you know.
Sorry, can I join in there?
Yeah.
And you can see that, so as Wynne's building up that picture, that you can see that Anne gradually was isolated from everybody that she knew. And people has perhaps taken advantage of this a wee bit.
Yeah.
You're a woman, vulnerable woman, with a quite amazing story to tell. And that story grew arms and legs. You know, it was spun quite deliberately, I think, into a story that was put forward by the Truth Movement for their own benefit, quite frankly.
Mm. Well, I think what we have here is Anne was actually suffering before, you know, a lot of people say, oh, she was sectioned and chucked into hospital because, you know, the Scottish government wanted to silence her. But no, she was actually suffering with mental issues before that.
She was delusional,
yes,
totally, and paranoid.
She wasn't chucked into a mental hospital because of the Holly Greg case.
No.
Well, she was in effect, but you know, people think that she was dragged off and thrown into a mental hospital because she was informing the police and campaigning. No, it wasn't.
Well, there were so many health workers,
yes,
you know, to do with Holly and to do with Anne, GPs, that were really, really concerned about her and her behaviour.
Yes.
And when she went to that woman's refuge, she was accusing the people there of being against her and
making copies of keys. And at one point, she said Dennis was even actually entering because they'd given him keys and he was putting poison in her milk.
Right. Totally psychotic,
yes,
behaviour.
It was them that sectioned her, her neighbours,
And so it spread so that eventually Anne didn't have to be making these accusations. But Linda McKenzie could turn around and make these accusations for Anne.
Yeah.
Like, those people, they don't believe this story. Well, they must be working for paedophiles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, before we get right into the meat of it, let's just go to Sylvia. What's your connection with this, and how did you know Anne?
Well, I knew Anne 30-odd years ago when she first married my cousin.
All right.
I've known her a long time. But then when Holly was born, she then cut herself off from all the family for about 18 years. So I only knew her latterly for about 2-3 years before she disappeared. And we used to meet them, her and Dennis and Holly, in the pub on a Friday night at the local hotel. So, you know, that's how I knew her. Latterly, just for the last 3 years before she disappeared again.
Okay. Well, I think to get into this, we should probably start with some basic facts. Obviously, the claim, one of the first claims on, there's kind of an official press release statement that are on all the campaign sites. And one of the first claims is there is medical and other evidence that supports Holly's account, and Grampian Police, etc., accepted her statement. I don't know who wants to take this, but what is the alleged medical evidence, and why does that not really hold up, in your opinion?
Well, they have doctor's letters going back to when she was at school, and there was no problems. They, you know, the school doctor said that there was absolutely no problems at all. She, you know, had some genital warts, etc. But there is, again, if they go onto the website, they will see a number that they can dial that will confirm exactly how warts are contracted, how they can be contracted, not just sexually. There are other ways.
I'll just pause the interview there because this is a point that I think could be misconstrued and is still being spun a lot by the Holly Gray campaign. Now, Holly's medical records are available for everybody to see on the hollygraycoverup.net, and they back up what Rachel is saying here. And remember, these reports are from years before Holly allegedly made her claims of abuse. They've just been retraced after the fact by the campaign and spun into their narrative. These were routine medical examinations from the early 90s while she was at school back in Scotland. She had a urinary problem and caught some kind of infection while in Brazil, something like worms, you know, that children often get or whatever. So they had a checkup and whatnot. And it was also found that she had perennial warts. Now, Robert Greene and the campaigners say they have evidence of abuse and Holly had a sexually transmitted disease, implying she caught it from one of the abusers or whatever. Greene won't give you these reports, but if you actually read them from the hoax site, there is nothing that would implicate a vast paedophile ring in abusing her. As Rachel says, there's nothing to say she caught the warts through intercourse. There was no mention of intercourse in any of these reports. Now, the parents were a bit concerned of some, you know, about some sexualized play in the school playground, but that's not too uncommon with children starting puberty and playing kiss chase and things. Just think back to when you were in the school playground. Some things do happen like that from time to time. And as the doctor says in the report, he has no reason to believe that these issues that came together around the same time are anything more than a coincidence, and parents just showing a little bit of concern. And just remember, if Dennis was supposedly the leader of this abuse ring, why would he be attending to a meeting with a doctor openly discussing these issues? There's a lot of giant leaps of faith with this case. And just to reiterate the whole warts thing, if you go on the NHS website, it says you do not need to have penetrative sex to pass the infection on because HPV is spread by skin-to-skin contact. Many articles will tell you that it's highly contagious, and some suggest, you know, keeping good hygiene around the home. And it says in some rare cases, they can also be passed on from warts on the hands. So this is not evidence that she was abused by a paedophile ring. All that being said, though, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean there wasn't some kind of inappropriate behaviour at school, or perhaps some kind of isolated abuse. But the point is, to say this is evidence of an adult paedophile ring is completely misleading. If Holly was abused from being 6 years old by a gang of adults, there would have been visible damage recorded in those reports. Constant abuse from being a young child would leave obvious signs to doctors. None of that was there. She was just a girl hitting puberty, had a couple of medical issues and had a checkup, and the parents were a little bit concerned of some sexualized play in the playground. That doesn't mean a vast ring of paedophiles reaching the highest levels of the Scottish establishment had been abusing her. There's no evidence for that. And in the slight possibility that there was some isolated abuse, well, they've gone and thrown the baby out with the bathwater by creating this vast mythology with no evidence. And then suddenly, about 10 years after this, when a vast abuse ring was supposed to have been taking place all this time, there's no concern from Anne, no doctor visits that indicate abuse, no personality problems with Holly, no reported pain, no nothing. Until Holly is an adult and Anne takes her to the doctor claiming she was abused and they discover she's no longer a virgin. Lots of Down syndrome adults are no longer virgins. So is that the only evidence? There's no damage, no eyewitnesses, no forensic evidence, no other clues. Just 10 years later, Anne asserts that Holly was abused. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
We are flipping the pyramid. Flipping the pyramid.
So there was no concerns there. And then, of course, there was the report by
CICA.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it was a case that Anne took Holly to the doctor, the forensic doctor there, and said that she'd been abused.
Right.
Well, you know, if you were confronted with a woman that was saying her child had been abused, you then examine this person and they're not a virgin and there's no other explanation, what can you deduce from that? You have to believe the woman. And that was why the money was paid out, was because Anne was adamant that Holly had been abused, but obviously didn't inform them that she'd had boyfriends. So that could possibly be the reason that she wasn't a virgin. Right. All it said was the signs of sexual activity, that's all. And of course, you know, like the CICA, when they pay out, they pay out for injuries that were sustained.
Yeah, can I just say that payment is not an admission of guilt on their part?
No. They don't have to know who, when, or anything
it's
about
it. It's for the injuries sustained.
Yes, and I suppose the only injury that they paid out for was the fact that she wasn't a virgin, and Anne claimed that, you know, she'd been abused. So really, the doctors there had no alternative but to put it down to the fact that she had possibly, and they did possibly.
Doesn't this agency really gather any extra information? I mean, it sounds a bit like a bad agency to me, just giving money out.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you can. We've seen instances on the internet. There's plenty of them. They are listed somewhere. I think they are, again, on the website, where people have been paid out and then claims are found to be false.
Mm.
Yeah, they'll pay out. You give them good enough reason and they'll pay out.
It's quite strange.
It is very strange, but you don't have to have any court case. You don't have to, you know, name anyone. You just go along and say, this has happened. And yes, obviously, they probably need some other documentation and bits and pieces, but... You know, basically, they will pay out on, you know, a mother saying that her daughter had been abused and she's not a virgin. So what else can they deduce from that? So that's how that got paid out.
And obviously,
to suggest she'd been abused from the age of, what was it?
Six.
Six.
Yeah.
And they were living in Brazil.
Brazil, yeah.
You know, who were the...
Again, I think any doctor, you know, with any credibility would be able to examine someone and see that if they've been abused from the age of six for 14 years by 22 people, there would be some sort of sign there, I think.
Well, there's no doubt the mother would have seen signs and they would have been quite horrendous, I would have thought. Yeah.
So basically, the money was paid out on the balance of probability. It was possible that Holly had been abused. It was possible, you know, so that's that, really. But, you know, again, people don't want to believe that, Keelan. People don't want to look at the CIC website. You know, they don't want to know the truth. They don't want to phone them up like we have and investigate.
Yes, it's the strangest thing. It's almost like people want a story to be true.
Yeah, they do. Desperately want to believe it. It has to be true. And they won't read anything. They won't listen to anything. They've just got their little mantra. There's three or four points that they, you know, continue.
Well, in fairness, Rachel, the people have listened to this, and I think there has been quite a turnaround. And I hope so. Anyway, the majority of people,
majority, but you can
see, look at this for what it is.
So if we go to obviously, there's a lot of people that have been accused, obviously Wynn and Sylvia themselves. Who are some of the other people that were accused, and why are a lot of those claims just not feasible at all? I mean, it's my understanding that some of the people accused don't even exist, so maybe you want to go into some of that.
Yes, that's true. Rachel, maybe you want to, or
Wynn? Okay, well, yeah. the number of people actually escalates as the years go on, and the documents that we've seen that was sent to us anonymously actually has the transcript of the police interviews, and Holly just names everybody really that she knows. She also names some of Anne's family and friends, which aren't put on the public list for some reason. And people like the sheriff, who didn't live in the area. Yeah. His wife is not Susie. He does not have a sister or a sister-in-law. So, you know, when people say, oh, why didn't the police go around and take their computers? Why didn't the police investigate them? How on earth do you investigate them that are nothing to do with it?
But she named her accountant.
Yeah, solicitor. After she thought people were doing her out of money. And as soon as that happened, the accountant went on the list and the solicitor as well.
Right. And the police carer.
And the procurator fiscal. Just my husband.
Anybody that didn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yes. My husband, everybody.
That's right. Anybody that she had a gripe with. And there is a video out there. It's the Tony Legend show, where you can clearly hear Anne coaching Holly. And the thing that struck me was I was listening to that one day, and at the end she said, and Evelyn's house. And we all know that there's not an Evelyn in this.
Who the hell she was.
Who the hell she was, we don't know. And then, of course, you have the children that were meant to have been abused alongside Holly.
Right.
They've actually made public statements saying, you know, some of them didn't meet her till they were in their teens.
No, and my daughters don't remember her at all.
That's right. So who are these children that were meant to have been held down by the women and raped by the men, as Robert was?
Shocking.
I know, and her brother-in-law's children. Yeah. But they weren't born then.
Yeah, so you can see how Mark Daly obviously walked away with this information.
Yes.
And it didn't take long for him to sit down and say, hold on a minute, these people, you know, this long list of people here, they're just all people that Anne had a gripe with, because her friends and family aren't on that list.
Yeah, right. Mark Daly just was brilliant.
Absolutely.
He was the start of a big turnaround.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He was the one that kick-started it off with challenging Robert, and Robert made a complete fool of himself.
Here is a snippet from the Tony Legend show with BBC's Mark Daly explaining his involvement and having quite a comical exchange with Robert Green as well. I think this will give some added perspective to the whole case.
I do, and you know, there are some things that I'm going to say tonight which probably won't be that easy for some of the people in the studio to hear, but I feel that my hand has been forced, and I just hope that you, Tony, give me a fair hearing, and I'm very pleased that Mr. Green is on the programme as well to join in the debate.
No worries. Well, let's just start at the beginning, if that's all right. How did you first hear of Holly Gregg?
Well, the story has passed to me, and I'll summarise very quickly how my involvement in this story began. I spoke to Robert Green, and I spoke to Anne, and I had some brief conversations. Over a few days, I asked for a selection of paperwork to be sent to me. I was told that there was a massive bundle of paperwork, which is always good for guys like me. So I asked for this to be sent to me, and it was sent, and on the face of it there was an extremely powerful story. What you had was a Down syndrome girl making very serious allegations. Now at this time we were looking to do a programme about justice and how people with learning disabilities have problems accessing justice for precisely the kinds of reasons that you people are campaigning, that they're not viewed as credible witnesses. This is an extremely important issue, and one which the BBC thought that we would have a look at. What Holly would have been was probably our chief case study. So, on the basis of the evidence which we had, it looked like there was some strong grounds to support Holly's allegation that she'd been abused by somebody in her family. That was supported by a letter from a senior police officer and the fact that she had received compensation despite no charges being brought. So on that basis alone, there was a very strong programme there. There was some other
allegations about a wider paedophile ring. Now, I've been a journalist for a lot of years. I've done programmes about many things. Paedophiles is one of them. I did a programme called Britain's Most Wanted Paedophiles. I chased five on-the-run paedophiles around Europe for months until they were finally back in police custody. I know quite a lot about the subject, and I know that these things do happen, and I know they happen in Britain, and I know that sometimes they happen under our noses. So I was prepared to believe that this, you know, these allegations could have some grounds. But on the basis of the initial allegations about the initial abuse carried out by somebody in her family, those allegations looked like they stood up. I had some opening conversations with a lawyer about whether or not I would have enough evidence to confront this person, and it looked like I probably did. And on that basis, I was given a provisional commission to make two programmes, a TV half-hour for Scotland and a radio half-hour for Scotland. And you must understand that journalists look into dozens and dozens of stories every year. Some make it, most don't. Some get commissioned and some get dropped midway through a commission because maybe the story isn't there or it's not what they thought or other things come up. Now, that's just part of television. So what we then did, and, you know, Robert, you've read the email out on this very programme, Tony, so I'm not debating what I have done about the fact that there was a provisional commission to make a programme on this case. So what next happened is I and my team travelled down to see Anne Holly. Robert Green was also there. And we spent 4 or 5 hours talking to the family, who, as I said at the time, I liked very much and sympathised with very much. We took away all the paperwork that we'd asked for. But very, very quickly, in fact, almost as soon as we came out of the house, we knew that there were problems. But, you know, within a week or two, we came to the conclusion that this was not a story that we could proceed with. We knew that the vast majority of these allegations were unprovable, and we were not in a position to pick and choose which allegations we wanted to believe, so we dropped the story. Now, Anne was informed, as was Robert. Now, just before you come back with questions, as I'm sure you've got a few, I took the precaution when I phoned up Anne to when I was telling her about my reasons for dropping the story. I took the precaution of secretly recording the conversation for note-taking purposes. I've also recorded the conversation with Robert Green for note-taking purposes. And BBC, you can do that, but you're not allowed to broadcast that material. It's just to protect you, for example, if a case comes to court or something like that. Now, as you know, both Anne and Robert have alleged that I told them that I had to drop this story because I was forced to by my bosses because of pressure from the government, pressure from a legal firm called Levy & McRae, and that I was in fear for my job, therefore I had to drop the story. Now, that conversation did not take place. Those words were not spoken, and I'm afraid that I have the recorded evidence to prove it. However, that didn't stop Robert and I'll say that, going around the country, going on various satellite television channels, online radio stations, and writing that, in fact, I had been forced to drop this story, that I was a journalistic coward, and I was in fear for my job. Now, I'm afraid it just isn't true, because I'm not in the business of shying away from big stories. Big stories are what I do. I've taken on some of the biggest institutions in the country, government, police. I do investigate paedophile stories. If I thought I could run this one, I would have done. And the suggestion that I or the BBC would have walked away from a story because it was too big or we were too scared, it's fanciful. It just is. It's misguided and insulting. If this story was what I was told it was, I would have been all over it, and I'm afraid the evidence did not support it. Now, I've got many, many other things that I want to say, but I want to give you or Robert the chance to come in
and ask me anything.
Well, I'd just like to go, I've got an email here from Marcus Ryder. Now, Marcus is your editor, is this correct?
That's true.
Now, I've got a letter here, it's to Mr. Green, that's Robert Green, it's from Marcus Ryder. Now, he says in the middle of this, when Mark Daly told Anne that he could lose his job if he were to broadcast such a story, the clear meaning behind this was that it would be careless and unprofessional to broadcast allegations which could not be proven.
Yeah.
Careless and unprofessional workers rarely keep their jobs, and I understand that.
That's
fair enough.
I said. At the end of my conversation, I said, look, if I was a kind of journalist that went around broadcasting allegations which I knew were unprovable, which I knew I could never find the evidence to back it up, then, you know, journalists like that don't stay journalists for very long. Now, somehow, in that explanation, it's gone from that to me being in fear for my job because I'm being pressurised by my boss, the government, and leaving the Cray. Now, those two things don't just tie up, Tony. Now, I ask you, Tony, as a journalist, which you told me you are, does it ring true to you that a journalist who's done the kind of work I've done would suddenly decide to walk away from a story because he was scared?
Now, Mark...
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Mark. Now, I may be a little old-fashioned, but I believe in chivalry. It is not only that you refuse to do the story that distresses me enormously, and we can talk about that, but I'm not going to talk about it unless you give me assurance on this. You were not only a situation where you did not run the story, but you insulted a lady, and that lady happens to be my client, Anne Gregg. You made serious aspersions in writing about her mental state. They were heartless, cruel, they were groundless, and moreover, you knew they were groundless. And unless I get an unconditional apology to you right now, Anne is here at the studio, I will not talk to you any more about this.
Right, okay. Robert, to be honest, I'm surprised you've actually come on the programme tonight to speak to me, and I think it would be rather cowardly of you if you were to suddenly hang or suddenly walk out the studio and not take any further part in the debate. Now, what I will say about what you've just said is that Anne passed me medical details about her. Now, if you think that I'm going to talk about somebody's personal medical details on air, I'm just not going to do it. What I will do is this, is from the notes, from the evidence, from the documents that I was given by Anne, it was very clear to me, in my opinion, that had I to rely on Anne in a court defending allegations I had made about somebody, a paedophile, a relative of Holly's, a sheriff, that I would not be able to rely on her in court. That was the conclusion I reached. It was a truthful conclusion I reached. That was what I believed, and that was what I said to Anne in a private letter, Robert. And I have no wish to talk about and mental health on air, with hundreds or thousands of people listening. Robert, there are various things online. You've said things online, you've said things to radio stations, to anyone who would listen, really. You've named this paedophile ring. You have, at the bottom of everything that you've written, you've said, you know, all these names are known to me as a result of my extensive investigations, and I believe them to be true. So, you've investigated all of these allegations, Robert, is that right?
Mark, I want an unconditional apology to Anne right now. I've
Robert,
just told you I'm not talking to you again until you behave like a gentleman. This is you and me, man to man. Have the guts to apologise for your disgusting remarks about Anne's mental state that had no bearing on the case anyway, and you knew to be false.
Tony, can I just suggest to you that I don't think Robert is going to engage in anything to do with me tonight because he knows that what I've got to say is going to be a slightly problematic for him. So if you can just try and mediate this situation. Robert, would you answer the question, please?
Well, no. Is that an unconditional apology to Anne? Will you withdraw everything you said and admit that what you said was groundless? It was based on lies, and you knew it to be false. I want you to say that on air now.
No, I'm sorry.
You're not getting off the hook that easily. You lied.
I'm sorry, I can't say that, Robert.
Well,
Robert,
in that case, I've nothing more to say to you, Mark. That's okay, the then. End as far as okay. I'm concerned.
Tony,
you are not a gentleman.
Okay,
you are a coward.
Tony, why don't you
insult
Tony, can you come
a lady,
back in right? here and just try and take control of the situation, please?
All right, well, listen, we'll move on, Mark. What else would you like to say here, Wilde? Because I know that you want to see this as the...
Tony, I've had months of this without ever being asked to give my side of the story. Even on this programme, Tony, not once was I asked to come on and put my side of the story. I wasn't asked for a right of reply. I had to ask to come on this programme. Okay? So, if you don't mind, I'd like to say my piece.
Yep, that's what. Go ahead, you have the floor.
Now, Graham, Robert, you say that you're an investigator. You say that all these allegations have been investigated and are known to you to be true. Now, let's start with the sheriff. Now, this sheriff, who's one of the ringleaders of this ring, the sheriff's sister is also involved, and the sheriff's brother-in-law. Am I right?
Yep, continue that.
Robert, am I right?
He was busy writing. Sorry, we're caught up in this. You said something there, Mark, about the...
Yes, you've just said another untruth, Mark. As you well know, I emailed you about the public meeting that was held on the 3rd of October at the Quaker Hall in Edinburgh.
What's that got to do with this?
It's got everything to do, because you said you weren't invited to give your part side of the story. I invited
you...
I invited you to that meeting. I was going to give you a platform in front of the public, and you didn't turn
it.
Oh, well, I know you got an email from me, I can assure you, on that.
Well, if I have, Robert, then...
But there was your chance. You had a platform. You've had no, because you had the chance to speak. You're only on the now because you're getting your collar felt, and you're probably under orders from somebody
to actually try and get the
BBC off the hook. And I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Tony, can you mediate this problem?
Yes, I'm trying to. Yes, go ahead.
Tony, now, as part of this paedophile ring, the ringleader is the sheriff. He's also involved with his sister and his sister's wife. Now, Robert, being an investigator, truth ninja, as he's been called, well, of course, I've made sure that these relationships exist. The truth, Tony, is that this sheriff has no sister, therefore has no brother-in-law, okay? So here are three of the main people in this paedophile ring, and two of them don't exist, okay? Now, shall I move on?
Yeah, I'd just like to... Anne, would you like to say anything on that, or...?
Well, that's not true at all.
Well, these things are very easily checkable through the register of birth, death and marriages, and I urge Robert to maybe have a look at that. Now, next.
I think you must have got the wrong sheriff there.
Say that again there, Al.
I think you must have got the wrong sheriff.
No, I don't have a wrong sheriff, Anne, I'm afraid. I don't. Now, if I can just continue.
Yeah, continue.
It's been said, well, firstly, the allegations were made at first in 2000, and many of the allegations were said to have, some of the abuse was said to have taken place in the sheriff's house in Aberdeen. This sheriff...
That's not true.
Well, I've seen some of the allegations, and it is true.
That's not true. That's not what we told you.
He didn't live in Aberdeen until 2000. He didn't live in Aberdeen until 2000. He only moved there in 2000. These are the kind of things...
We never said his house. We never mentioned his house at all.
These are the kind of things that investigators investigate to see whether or not they can proceed with a story. Now, can I move
that
on?
That was never said at all. It was his house.
Okay, well, I think you have said that. That allegation has been made, Anne.
Holly's here. Do you want to speak to Holly and ask her?
No, I don't. Anne.
No,
I think
no, I didn't think you would.
No,
you never say it was the sheriff's house. We
had
no evidence at that time, so I'm afraid,
Robert,
this is another lot of nonsense you're coming out with.
You know the seven other children that you've named?
Yes.
Two of them weren't born at the time of these allegations.
I think you're absolutely wrong there, Mark.
Have you spoken to any of these people?
I'm not making any comments.
Have you spoken to any of the people that you've said are part of this paedophile ring? Have you spoken to any of the other victims that you've named?
Because these
Robert,
children that you are speaking about
are
all
about
adults
this.
Now.
Sorry?
These children that you are speaking about are all adults.
Well, they're not. Two of them are 10 years old, and
right?
They're not born at
they
the time of the
allegations.
All
adults.
Shall I move on?
Yeah, continue if you want, yeah.
Now, it's been said that your son
was, well, he had he faced a charge for lewd and libidinous behaviour, I think it was some sort of flashing offence. But the sheriff in question helped him to get off with it. Okay, I don't think that's in dispute at all.
No, no, that's not what I said at all.
And that his business card was found.
That's correct.
Now, the business card...
No, it wasn't
a
business card for... it was for a lawyer, not a sheriff.
Okay, but as the allegation, as I was told, was the lawyer is the same as the sheriff. And that was the sheriff who helped him get off. But in fact, he didn't get off. He was convicted of that offence.
Well, Mark, if I could just come in for a minute. Like, obviously... We're getting into the ins and outs here, which
is... Yes, but Tony, it's important because I'm telling you the reasons that a story like this can't be published or broadcast, because when it comes to it, when you look at the allegations, when you look at the evidence, I'm afraid that many of the allegations just don't stand up.
But, I mean, just for a minute, maybe you've called me naive for thinking this before, but surely a court of law would be the place to have these sort of discussions and not on the Tony Legend Show.
Well,
a court of law would be a much more ideal place, you know, hands
Tony,
on the Bible
Tony,
and swearing
you know
oaths
Tony,
and stuff.
You've got a great point there. And the point here is that the one allegation that had any legs, the one allegation that should have been brought in front of a court, in front of a judge, had been lost in a deluge of these other allegations, which I'm afraid don't stand up. Now, if Robert, this lead investigator, had taken the time to perhaps go and speak to any of the other victims that he's named, to any of the people that he's accused of being a paedophile, he might have been able to get a little bit closer to the truth himself.
We are flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid. We aim to see the world as it really is.
Turning that pyramid on its head.
www.flippingthepyramid.co.uk.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flipping the pyramid.
Flippingthepyramid.co.uk.
Flipping the whole paradigm of that hierarchical system on its head.
Yes, Mark really had a problem that he couldn't challenge him openly. No. The BBC could not challenge Robert openly because they were seen to be challenging a woman with mental health problems. They weren't about to do that.
Oh,
and
right.
this was Daly's problem. Well, so he did go on the Tony Legend Show, but not representing the BBC. I can see why he had to do that. It was a very difficult situation for him to be in.
Well, that's right. I mean, he
was terribly maligned by that, wasn't he? When
absolutely.
He got hate mail. He got the most vicious hate mail.
Mm. And I think the bottom line with this is, you know, Robert accuses Mark Daly of lying, but Mark Daly is in possession of those conversations, and Robert refuses to give permission to Mark Daly so that he can actually release them to show who is lying.
Yeah.
Well, that's what strikes me about all of these claims, is that, you know, Robert Greene claims to have got documents and correspondence between people and things like this, but when you go on the websites, there's not really anything there for anyone to really look at or cross-reference or anything. On your website, there's documents and things that you can look at, but the people making the claims, there isn't really anything to go on.
That's right.
Nothing. And if you ask them to this day, Belinda, Gerrish, Robert Greene, they'll say, well, we've got stuff, but we can't show you it.
Yeah.
We just have to wait for a public inquiry.
Yeah, which isn't going to happen. I mean, can you imagine making, well, now adults, you know, Wynne and Sylvia's children, stand in court and be made to say they were abused? I mean, they're just going to be laughed at and will be laughed out of court because, you know, how can you make people stand in a courtroom and say they've been abused when they haven't? And that is the core of the allegations, that these children were abused with Holly.
How far did the official kind of police investigation go? Because obviously the claim has always been that there hasn't been a proper investigation, but what take place? What statements were taken?
Well, I'll tell you one thing to start with. The statements, the points are on the website. This is the Holly Greg Hoax website, and another website that I'm going to give you the links for. So the links hopefully will be copied with the YouTube video. for yeah. people to read them in detail themselves.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, if Rachel, if you want to paraphrase any of it, just carry on.
The police investigations?
Yes, how much?
Well, I think probably one of the ones that's come up recently has been, why didn't the police go in and take all the, you know, Dennis's computer? Well, Anne had that computer. The question has to be, why didn't Anne take that computer to the police for checking? And I think also when the police started realising all these names that were being reeled off, when they did check them. I know, we know they checked those names. And when they realised that these names, some of them didn't exist, you know, people that were nothing to do with it, I mean, what can they do? Mm-hmm. They did investigate, actually. They did go and question people. We know that. But you see, an investigation, for the likes of the Robert Greene and Greg supporters are, you know, taking them into custody and questioning them, you know, but that's not how it happened. They were questioned. It wasn't investigated in the sense of, you know, taking them in under charge. No. They were spoken to.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are procedures in place. You can't just call somebody something and expect them to get carted off. There has to be...
No.
Obviously, people would be doing it willy-nilly, wouldn't they?
So. Yeah, that's right. But they soon realised, after speaking to a few people that have been accused or a few of the victims, that it was, how can you investigate this? This is ridiculous.
Mm.
And then Polly would come out with more names, so Anne would phone up the police and say, oh, she's come out with more names now.
But there was never any information like dates, times, locations, or any descriptions. Mm. No, it was a fabricated. It was a story, almost like a bit of a soap opera.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the police did investigate, but obviously, you know, the thing is as well is the police are not going to release what they have actually done. You know, they're not going to give it to the people that say, well, you haven't investigated. The police aren't going to release all, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that they've done, but they have done it.
In 2010, we were all interviewed for at least 2 hours, you know,
yes,
individually.
At least, yes, we were.
Okay. So obviously, Robert Greene is one of the main talking heads in all of this. He's the one who was leading the campaign. He's the one that's done a lot of the media rounds. Most people seem to have come across this case because of Robert Greene and the UK column and so on. But I mean, who is Robert Greene? How did he get involved? I guess why did he get involved? What do we know the background of Robert Greene?
Robert Greene used to be a travel agent, and he sort of reinvented himself as a bit of an investigator after he went through a sort of financial crisis with his own travel business, where he felt that he'd been done out of money, and he turned into a sort of investigator type. This is documented. It's on the website. Again, I'll give you some links. And this gave him, I think, a flavour for what it might be like to be a sort of investigator. And he went on, and through a man called Stuart Usher, a Scottish man who ran Scotland Against Crooked Lawyers. And so lots of people came to Stuart Usher with their problems, specifically, legal problems. And Anne Gregg was one of them. And Anne knew Stuart Usher for years, and Stuart knew her story. And then he got in contact with Robert Greene. So that was how Anne and Robert met. And Robert took this story on full time. I mean, he dedicated himself to it. And he seemed to, I don't know, I mean, he obviously enjoyed it to a certain extent.
Yes, he likes the limelight.
Yeah, absolutely, he's an egotist.
Yeah.
Does he have his own family, or?
He's got a grown up family.
Right.
And he's separated from his wife. But I mean, he had the time to do this investigation. I'm not so well. Yeah, he didn't investigate at all. He'd never been in Aberdeen before, so how he can investigate it remotely, I don't know. But he didn't do any investigation. But he took on this job of speaking for Anne, basically, and speaking for the whole campaign. And not, I mean, then and not long after that, Belinda was involved as well. And Belinda's the, I think, the sort of bankrolling behind it that allowed, you know, Robert was up in court in how many times? 19 times he had to come up to Stonehaven to appear in court. And that obviously cost a bit of money.
Well, he was jailed for a time, I believe, wasn't he?
He was in jail, yes.
His side of the story is obviously that they were trumped up charges, he's being silenced, and he was kind of martyred that way, but he's never really been clear about why he actually was arrested and charged and whatnot. So what is the actual story there?
Well, he falsely says that he was arrested for handing or attempting to hand out leaflets. And this is absolute nonsense. The reason that he was arrested was for sending letters in the post to all the accused's neighbours.
Right.
In every, you know, area where they lived, he sent letters in the post to neighbours.
And businesses in Aberdeen.
Yeah,
and
it's horrendous letters.
Aberdeen, naming names and calling them, calling them paedophiles.
Virtually saying, do you know your neighbour is a paedophile? And, a terrible letter.
That now makes sense with the breach of the peace. I mean, even if it was true, you can't go around accusing people without a trial or whatever. So it doesn't
matter. That was why he was arrested.
And make no pains about it. I mean, the sheriff, you know, we've seen the documents, the bill, and he, you know, he was trying to ignore it, hoping that it was going to die out. You know, he didn't want to make it, although he was horrified and very upset, he was trying very hard to, you know, sit back and hope that this was all going to fizzle out, that this was going to die a death, but it didn't. You know, the sheriff was watching this for a long time, and in the end, he had to take out an interdict. So it wasn't like they all jumped on Robert Green and all the, I mean, the sheriff, you know, for one, who was falsely accused, you know, he gave it time to die out, but it didn't. It just escalated. And, you know, what I think it was the Press and Journal actually were told to desist from all of this as well, back in 2009, I think it was.
Yeah, but they had already run a story with
that. That's right. That's right. They had. Yeah. And it was all being closely monitored. And
my husband's name being mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. So Robert had been doing this for a while. Plus, publicly, you know, he was in a, you know, naming people publicly in 2009. You know, he was the first one to actually name these people. You know, that's why he got arrested. He was going around naming people, sending letters out. It wasn't because he was going to hand out leaflets.
And he named us in different talks and meetings he had.
Mm-hmm. On the radio and on the television.
That's right.
So, and then, of course, when he was in prison, then the kind of campaign movement got a bit of a publicity stunt with people... I think Belinda McKenzie storming the car park and shouting over the wall and
singing and
all that kind of thing.
It's like really that when Roger Hayes, Bill Maloney, Gerrish and Lou Collins all appeared on their show, trying to motivate everybody to get up to Aberdeen. At one point, Gerrish said that he had coaches ready to leave from Plymouth. There was going to be coach loads of people. Coming north to Aberdeen to hand out these...
The same leaflet that... I mean, they actually announced we are going to hand out the same leaflet that Robert Green was handing out when he got arrested. And it wasn't until it was pointed out to them, you know, that interdict says Robert Green or anyone acting on his behalf. And then all of a sudden it was retracted and, oh, well, we'll send out different leaflets then.
Yeah, did you point that out to them, Rachel?
Yeah. This is it, none of them had read anything,
and I spoke to Roger Hayes just the other day and he was saying that was the case. They were going to hand out these leaflets naming people. And
we're
then,
like, hold on a minute, have you not read the interdict? You know, it's Robert Green or anyone on his behalf.
And what happened anyway, there wasn't such a big turnout to Aberdeen as you might see from the videos. There wasn't the coach loads that they were hoping for.
Nope.
But there was...
Well, people at Stonehaven as well. There was only half a dozen or so.
That's right.
And they were from Aberdeen.
Because Sylvia and I were at the court every day.
Every day, and there was only two or three in the morning sometime, and about six by lunchtime.
And I don't know whether you want to go into that footage, but there is some very reminiscent of a witch hunt, really, footage on YouTube of you, Sylvia, I believe. Everyone shouting at you, saying shame on you. They've crudely edited it so it zooms in as you're making a face and things like that. I mean, it just sends shivers that so many people would blindly believe something like that at face value.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Not that I've seen it, by the way.
Yeah. No, Sylvia doesn't watch any of these things, and quite rightly so. It's disgusting. I've managed to have one of the videos taken off YouTube.
Oh, good.
One of them removed, and I'm still attempting to get others removed. I've asked Brian Gerrish, Bill Maloney, Roger Hayes, Lou Collins several times. I've entered into huge, long email conversations with them, which I've gone on for weeks now. I've printed them up on they're on Facebook, available for anybody to look at. When I first started talking to them, I was, can you please just listen of what we're trying to say and try to show you. And Belinda had already said that I was a paedophile and I worked for Sheriff Buchanan and I was a paedo protector and I was MI5 and all these things. So the response I got from Gerrish was, he was never impolite to me, but he was not going to look at anything that I was going to show him. He knew and he was not going to be told by anybody else what the case was. And he said, we've got information that you don't.
Well, he still claims to this day that Holly was abused by high-ranking officials in the Scottish Government. And I've asked him so many times, please can you provide me, you know, privately, we don't have to, you know, display the names, but please can you let me know who these people are?
So do we think, you know, Robert Green, Brian Gerrish, Belinda, do we think they genuinely believe what they're saying, or... You know, what do you think their motive is if they don't? I mean, it's a bit...
When I went to Stonehaven one day on Robert's trial, and I was speaking to Belinda at the time, and she was visibly shaken, and it was the day after that Wynne and Sylvia had given their testimony, and she said to me, they're either very, very, very good actresses or they're telling the truth, and I made a horrible mistake.
And
she was visibly shaken when she was telling me this. But she went back down south and kept up with the story. So, I think that you'd have to ask Belinda herself what she actually believes, because I don't know what she believes and what she is just touting or spinning. She has put a, you know, since Robert went to jail, they put a donate button on her, on the website. I don't know how much money they accrued through it, but it's possibly money is a motivation for these people. I have no idea. What Brian Gerrish's motivation might be different again. I do think Brian is a political animal. He wants to be he wants power, but I don't think he's a truther. I don't think he's interested in protecting women and vulnerable children. I don't think that at all. He's got no experience of that, and he doesn't come from that background.
He's purely in it for politics, I think. I think he must be really naive to just blindly believe all this.
Yeah.
Totally naive.
Well, I'm sure they don't believe it now, but they don't want to be seen to be backing down. After Belinda had been in court for the 2 weeks, or almost 2 weeks, of all these people giving evidence, she couldn't possibly believe that it was true.
No.
It was just ridiculous, to the amount of evidence against.
So,
well, this is what I've been saying, sorry, to Roger Hayes. Roger believes that, you know, he's fence-sitting at the moment, but he's going to try and act as a go-between. He believes it's just entrenched thinking on Gerrish's part. But, I mean, really, it's been months and months. I don't think it's good enough, to be honest.
No, they class themselves as the truth movement, but they don't want to listen to anything. I've said to Brian,
Ike is every bit to blame as well. He has the biggest listenership.
Yeah, I believe that a lot.
Yes, he took it internationally.
Yeah, Alec Jones and everybody. It was just horrendous.
Mm.
And of course, Ike likes to kind of harp on about satanic abuse and things like this, but I mean, he himself never really gives any evidence. Something you pointed me to, I think a video by somebody called Pyrite, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And in there, he mentions some kind of connection between Robert Greene and the Tavistock Institute or something like that, and that he was told to harp up about the satanic side of the story and things. I mean, what's all that about?
Well, it's quite interesting, and I do think that, the Holy Grail case was seen to be a successful campaign. So, of course, it was going to attract people latching onto it. So around about November or so last year, Robert got in tow with this man called Wilfred Wong, who represented a Christian group, Christians Against Satanic Abuse, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And involved Robert in meetings with people who were interested in Satanism and high up people that had been working in that field for a long time, including Valerie Sinison.
Mm-hmm. Eva Harding as well worked for the Tavistock.
Eva Harding. So Robert was meeting with these people in a big house in Golders Green, having a nice sort of middle class dinner party with these people. He felt he'd arrived. They were saying that he was, they were taking him into the Parliament. He was going to talk about the Holy Grail case. He was going to present it in Parliament. Of course, it was in a meeting room in the Parliament buildings. It wasn't in Parliament itself.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this was a big step for him. And to do this, they wanted him to sex up the satanic aspect of the abuse. And he did. He got up in front of a hall full of people and said, yes, it's satanic. I didn't want to talk about it for years because it might put people off or whatever. But yes, it's a satanic element to it. And of course, those YouTube videos got thousands more hits than any of his other YouTube videos. This is what people were waiting to hear.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
And it was, there was no more satanic abuse to it than any abuse at all. I mean, none of it. It's all been fabricated.
Well, when you see Valerie Sinison and what she's been connected to, she's convinced people that they have been satanically abused and they haven't. And she worked for the Tavistock for years, which Eva Harding, that is one of the reports that they will always refer back to. Eva Harding, she was the one that interviewed Holly, having had a good chat with Anne first, so she's going into this session with Holly already being primed. My daughter's been abused. Now Eva Harding, she's dead now, so she can't defend herself at all, but she worked for the Tavistock for a while as well, and she was looking for the same thing as Valerie Sinison, satanic abuse. She was looking for the abuse, and as far as they're concerned, they don't investigate anything. And I think that was one of the pieces, again, it's on the website if people want to go and look at. There's a great long article about Valerie Sinison. Which
it's very interesting. Everybody should look at that. That's
and it was Carol Myers. It was the Carol Myers case that Valerie Sinison was involved with. And Carol Myers ended up killing herself. We've actually been in contact with Carol Myers' family, and they were horrified at the parallels between the Holly Gregg stuff and their case.
Wow.
And the satanic side of it. And there is actually, in this paperwork that was distributed around, there's bits that say that Holly said she saw somebody, a man or an adult, satanically murdered. And Robert, you know, again, stands up and says, you know, it's all satanic and the children were being held down and beaten with belts and, you know.
Just ridiculous.
I mean, you know, what with these children that didn't even know her? It's all been, you know, moulded around the story that they would like to hear.
Well, Sarah, as you've alluded to, I mean, this has obviously impacted on the, quote, truth movement. I mean, personally, over the last year or so, I've tried to move away from sort of cliched terms and things like that, because it does seem to me that a lot of the time the alternative media aren't really checking the facts, rather they're just picking at things to fit their worldview. And I mean, it's a worldview in some aspects that I agree with, but you know, they're not doing the legwork. And we can all point at the BBC and say, oh, the BBC aren't doing their job, you know, war propaganda, they're all lying to us and things. But it's almost like they flipped it all around and are doing exactly the same thing.
Yes, I agree. They have. And I don't know, I mean, is it just because they've got a little bit of power, a little bit of credence now that they think that they can determine what people believe? I mean, one of the things that strikes me about who the sort of Belinda followers and the Gerish followers is that they're quite often people that are, you know, vulnerable, and they're maybe not people that have, you know, high level of education, and they cling on to people like Belinda, Gerish are very plausible, they look like nice people. Mm. Gerish has set himself up with what looks like a news programme that he reads the news from 3 or 4 times a week. But I mean, if you actually listen to it, it's very negative. He doesn't have a great plan for helping people. It's just he wants to attack. Oh. I think he's very, you know, anti-authoritarian, and he wants to attack the authorities. He's got an axe to grind.
I think that's the thing with a lot of people, that you can see them, that they are vulnerable people, that you know, they have problems of their own.
They've been abused, maybe, and they're attracted to that story, and now they're getting abused again. It's terrible.
Yeah.
They're donating money to these people.
And it's almost as they see the Holy Greg as their saviour. It's the Holy Greg story that's going to solve all of their problems too. And that's really worrying, that they're not spending time trying to solve their own problems. They're looking to people like Belinda, Gerish, Robert Greene to solve it for them.
Keelan, did you hear about Belinda and Iran-Aid?
No, I didn't, no.
Well, can you give us a brief rundown on that, Rachel?
Yeah, well, Belinda was, again, she denies that she said, I saw somewhere that she did actually say that she wasn't a trustee for Iran-Aid. It was a charity set up, and the donations were to go to the orphans and for aid for people in Iran. And I think over 15 years, they collected £75 million.
Blimey.
And somebody complained about the aggressive way in which Iran-Aid were collecting their money. So they were investigated, and so the Charities Commission were going to go in and get the documents to see exactly what was going on. And Belinda denies any knowledge of it, but these documents were destroyed. They say it's because, you know, there were identities of people in Iran that they didn't want to get out because it was too dangerous for them. But these documents were destroyed. Now, that charity was shut down. And when they tried to trace the money, they traced it to Germany, and then they couldn't find out where it went from there. And not only that, no one, no charity, no organisation in Iran had ever heard of Iran-Aid.
Right.
So there was £75 million that's just disappeared into thin air. The Charities Commission that we've been in contact with are very ambiguous with their information. She wasn't prosecuted or Iran-Aid wasn't even prosecuted, that we can find, for destroying legal documents. And she, you know, she's headed this campaign, Iran-Aid, and
And other charities as well.
Other charities. She's given money to many other things. And she's and now it looks like she's connected with other charities, which is an ongoing investigation at the moment.
Yes, I mean, you really got to... I mean, people can do their own research, Keelan. They don't need to believe us.
No. Nope.
But they need to look very closely at these groups and who they're donating money to.
Well, Belinda's always struck me as quite a strange figure in the wider truth movement. I know... I believe she was a landlady of David Shaler and Annie Michon, and they were... Yeah. Former MI5 agents that came out, and Shaler himself.
You can never be a former MI5 agent.
Yeah, and Shaler himself went potty, didn't he? So
yes, she's got other MI5 connections as well, doesn't she, Rachel?
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, how, you know, we've sort of tried to analyse this, and you know, we just sort of think, well, how better to infiltrate these movements than have people like David and Annie move in? They can hear everything, they can see everything, they know who's heading which campaign, which country's doing. I mean, you know, they know so much, and I don't think you can ever be ex-MI5. I don't think that's possible. So yeah, Belinda has very strange connections with all over the world. We found her all over the world.
Yes, and she didn't hesitate to turn around and call me MI5.
Yeah.
or other people. Yeah. You know, so what's actually going through this woman's mind?
Well, I've kind of experienced a similar thing. I mean, I've done a lot of investigative kind of work into the London bombings. And because I have a slightly different view on what may have happened than the, quote, popular conspiracy theories on it, I'm all of a sudden the gatekeeper, the shill and all this.
Yeah.
And you have guys like this Muad'Dib guy who claims himself the Messiah, and he's in there with Belinda McKenzie. And you have all, it's almost like they're there to make everyone look silly. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's a good way of discrediting it, isn't it? And keeping an eye on it.
And to bring it back to the Holly Gregg case, so really what we're looking at is that Anne, a woman with mental health problems, is surrounded by these people who are actually using her. Now, who's looking after her?
Yeah.
Who's looking after her and Holly? I don't know. No. I don't know who she's living with. Is it Belinda? You know, is Belinda looking after her best interests, or is Belinda just writing her website and collecting from the donate button? And this is the exact same question that I've asked Gerrish and Hayes, and neither of them can give me a good answer. And that's basically what we're looking at. It's a vulnerable woman surrounded by these Fruit Loops.
Do we know what the status of Dennis and Greg are? Have they attempted to contact Holly any time recently? Or, I mean, are they completely shut out?
Well, when maybe had the last contact with the family? When?
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't say too much. You know,
I don't want to say it, really.
Yeah.
Sylvia.
Mean, Greg's been attacked on the internet. I mean, they both have been attacked viciously on the internet.
Yes.
So there is a wee feeling that to protect them a bit.
Yeah.
Greg has made desperate attempts to try to, you know, be back in contact with his mother. And they're all rejected.
Yes. Well, one of them, he actually, there was questions posed to Greg, and Brian Gerrish was part of this.
Oh, really?
I think Anne said, well, that's not my son, give him a couple of questions. So Brian Gerrish asked him a couple of questions, and Greg did answer one, but not the other. So Anne said, no, that's not my son, and that was the end of it.
But that boy is devastated, absolutely devastated.
Yeah. And he wants to, you know, Holly wanted to see him. I mean, Anne took an injunction out to restrict her own son from seeing Holly. And it was refused because Holly wanted to see her brother.
Yeah.
And it was
her
Anne.
Father, no doubt.
Yes, her father as well.
Yeah, that's right. Holly wanted to see them. She missed them and wanted to see them. But Anne was desperately trying to prevent Greg from seeing her.
I mean, Anne has... It removed Holly from every contact that she had, from her aunties, her uncles, her friends, everybody. And that kid now has no contact with anybody from our past that she loved, you know.
Yes, the whole world, really.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very sad state of affairs. I mean, how do we move forward with this? I mean, do we hope the campaign just fizzles out, or do you think we should perhaps be going to confront some of the talking heads head on with this?
I'm not confronting them, but I'm in talks with Roger Hayes at the moment, who wants this all to for people to overcome their entrenched thinking, basically. He's not saying I'm right or Gerish is right or either things. He's just right in the middle. But he's talking about it taking months. Mm. My point of view is it's a much more urgent thing than that, is what I've just said. That Anne, who's looking after Anne?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, and that is the most immediate problem. And after that, people can then go and think, right, people do the research and think what they like. It's not up to me to tell people what to think.
Yeah.
Just me and Rachel and others have put information out there, but we've not got a donate button. We don't effectively really care what people think, but they do have to, you know, we like critical thinkers that look at evidence.
Mm. And also I would say everything we put out, we can back up. That's the difference. We have provided people with documents, with information, and you know, it's up to them what they believe. That's absolutely fine. We're not saying you've got to believe what we believe, but please read them and think about them critically, as you say, Sarah. You know, sit and actually think about what you're reading.
So the next stage is, I really don't know, apart from there is a degree of urgency. I don't think it can just be left. And I think what Gerish is hoping for is it will just peter out. Nobody's going to confront him on it again. I don't think he's a stupid man.
And who's going to be there for Anne? You know, who's going to be there for her and Holly when they just all of a sudden walk away one day going, you know.
That's the number one concern.
Yeah.
And it should be
Holly is, yes.
Shropshire Social Services, obviously.
Yeah, well, someone's got to be there for her, because when these people have finally finished mopping the floor with Anne and walk away, she's going to need support, and she's going to need friends around her. And, you know, she's ostracized all of her friends. She hasn't got any, and she's going to need a support system immediately to help her get over this.
Yes, she's got a certain amount of fame and notoriety through the internet as well, so she had to be protected a wee bit. It's not that she could just go out and go about her business.
No.
People know her face.
Mm. And you see, you know, as venomous are the people at the moment, you know, following Robert and Gerish and that, if all of a sudden, you know, it all falls through and people actually see that it has been a hoax and a load of lies, they could attack Anne. And we, you know, that can't be the case, because she needs to be protected.
Yep.
So did we.
That's right. The same with you, Wynne. You know, that's what I've said to you. We're here to help you.
Yes.
And we'd love to help Anne and protect Anne and help her sort herself out too.
I mean, how are you, Wynne and Sylvia? I mean, are you constantly getting hate mail and things like that, or are you fairly kind of out the way?
No, I just had one letter. But...
No, I'm quite fine with the whole thing now. It doesn't bother me one iota, but that is because of the help from Sarah, Rachel, you know, and everybody in the hoax group, and what they've done to turn it around.
Yes, but it was horrible at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
When you went out to your house and thinking that everybody in the street were thinking that you were a paedophile.
It was terrible.
Because it was written down and posted to them.
And my sons were absolutely furious that they would have been supposedly abused. They were furious.
Yeah, my girls too.
Well, there's... Just for the sake of... making sure we cover all the points here, there's a few things that I know people are listeners might point out or whatever. They'll say, oh, what about this, what about that? So we have Roy and his death. Why don't you just quickly kind of explain that and why it wasn't murder?
If I could just make one point about that, and then somebody else can talk. But up until Robert Green came on the scene, Anne was perfectly accepting that it was suicide. Her brother had committed suicide. and there was no talk of it being murder up until after Robert Greene was on the scene. But perhaps there's other details that you might want to hear, maybe from Rachel or one of the others, about the autopsy or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, all I can add is I have actually seen the autopsy now. The best person to speak to that is Lil. She's not here at the moment, but the best person to speak about that is Lil. But I have seen the autopsy, and, you know, Robert and Anne claim that Roy was beaten up, thrown into a burning car, and, was murdered. And that the person that came, you know, that tried to get him out of the car was, you know, suspect as a murderer. Now, you know, when you've read the autopsy report, you can actually see, you know, this is absolutely untrue. And that is one of the reasons why Robert, I mean, okay, an autopsy report isn't a very nice document to release, but Robert and Anne hide that away. They guard that with their lives because they know that that document, that single document, will prove that they are lying because it does not say what they claim it says. And Stuart Usher, again, I will say it again, and the video is gone, unfortunately. I can't find it. But Stuart Usher even admitted that he had never seen the autopsy report. He just believed basically what Anne and Robert had told him until he read it. And he actually admitted on live radio that it did not say what Anne and Robert said did. And so did Mark Daly. He's obviously seen it. Yeah. So, you know, that one document alone, if it were released, would prove that what they're saying is not true.
How much of any of this kind of detail came out in Robert's hearing? Was there any kind of presentation of any kind of evidence or anything like that?
Yes,
the pathologist was wonderful.
Yes, in the court
he spelled it out how it was impossible to have been, that he'd been beaten up and murdered. He spelled it out in pieces that people could totally understand, that he died of smoke inhalation.
Okay. Well, I mean, unless you've got anything else to add, I think
there's always more, but just to bring you right up to speed, Keelan, that last Friday there was a hearing in the Royal Courts of Justice that Anne was present at.
Okay.
What was it called again? I don't know the legal term. Brian Gerrish was there, Belinda McKenzie, Robert Greene was there. But it was only Anne that was allowed in the court.
It's a closed court.
Closed court. We don't know what happened. It's not been made public by any of the websites. The only thing that's happened subsequently is that on the official website they've said that Robert Greene is no longer working with the Holly Demands Justice team, that effectively he's been sacked.
All right.
So that is the latest from...
He doesn't say that.
But he doesn't know.
He came back on his blog and said, no, I've not been, you know, I've not left them. So there's obviously a difference of opinion there. But apart from that, we don't really know what happened at that hearing. We could speculate, but I don't know. Mm. So that's the latest.
Mm. Yeah, so Roberts isn't aware that he's been given...
Well, he's been dropped, but he just refuses to leave it alone. He says he'll still keep campaigning.
Yeah.
Tell us some of the websites and Facebook pages and things that people can find more info on.
Well, there's Holly Demands Justice and Holly Greg Hoax on Facebook. There's email conversations with Brian Gerrish, which is very amusing if anybody wants to go there and read Brian's emails with a variety of us. I mean, five or six of us were in long communications with him. And he went through all different stages of saying that he wouldn't talk to us if we were anonymous. He wouldn't talk to us because he suspected we were paedophiles. And then at the end, he offered to pray for me. That was his sort of parting shot. You know, I've never been anonymous to the man at all. He knows who I am. But his last thing is that he's going to pray for me. So I left it there.
So at this stage, there's no kind of possibility of a debate between both sides or anything like that?
I would never close the doors. I would always debate with them.
We would love someone to mediate a calm, sensible, debate. We would love someone to mediate it.
We have never been rude to people. That's not our thing. We don't call them names. We want to engage. We want to talk to these people. So that's some of the Facebook sites. Now the website is the Holly Gregg hoax, but I believe the URL is called the Holly Gregg coverup.net.
Yeah. So I'll make sure all that
you'll find
is.
It's great. And then there's another blog, Holly Gregg hoax. So basically, if you're just googling Holly Gregg hoax, you'll come across everything in great detail.
Okay. Well.
Helen, can I just mention something that's maybe not too significant?
Yeah, cool.
But as far as debating, Sarah, do you remember I offered to go and visit Robert Kane in prison?
Yes.
And he made every excuse that no, it wasn't possible.
Yes.
And I would have debated with him, I can assure you.
Yes.
However,
Robert's never met any of the accused, he's never spoken to them, he's never emailed them or anything.
You think that would be his first point of call, would be to...
Well, you would think it might be.
Well, he's never been to Aberdeen, so he can't investigate. Well, the first time he went to Aberdeen. Yeah, he hadn't been up prior to when he was arrested.
I mean, part of the investigation in Stonehaven, part of the court case was that they had gone through his computer and found that he had looked up all these addresses in Aberdeen that he was going to post these leaflets to and all the postcards.
Which he did.
Yes, exactly. So that's what he did. And that's what he did before he'd ever been to Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Is there anything else anyone would like to add here at the end?
Well, I'd just like to say, please, come, let's get together and have, an adult, calm, respectable debate. We want to understand where other people are coming from, and we'd like other people to listen to us, and we just want to talk to people.
Yep, brilliant. Yeah, I would second that. No,
yeah,
every time.
And name calling, give us the respect. Don't call us pedo protectors.
Oh, we've been through the mill. We've so much hate on the internet. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
but we've also had a lot of people saying well done and thanks for doing that, and that's really good. And then we've had people like yourself, Keelan, who give us a platform, which is brilliant. Thank you very much for that.
Yes, thank you.
And also when we're the last show we did, we said, look, we don't mind answering questions, and we got 40 questions which were answered, which is, what we said we do. Yes, we will answer questions. And we got 40 questions, which we answered. And we said, well, perhaps now you could oblige by just answering some of ours. And no way.
Nothing. From them. Never.
No way.
There's another character who's very instrumental in this, and that's Ian McFerrin. I don't know if you know him, Keelan, but he was a big mover, shaker for the Holly Gregg, Holly Demands Justice team. And immediately there was any questions asked, or you just block us all,
yeah.
No contact, no, just a complete wall. So I don't know how you deal with these people.
Mm.
But I mean, he's sending out letters after letters after letters, but nobody's allowed to ask him questions. What would you do?
Hopefully going forward, after this show, maybe some other people will have you on their shows, and maybe... this will gradually get out there. I have a little impact. I'm not as big as the UK column or all that kind of stuff, but I think we're heading in the right direction here.
Everything helps.
Thanks, Keon. Yeah, definitely. It's been brilliant.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
No worries. I'll hopefully speak to you again sometime in the future.
We are flipping the pyramid. Flipping the pyramid.
Well, there you have it. That was the Holly Gregg hoax group, along with two of the alleged abusers. And I think it's fairly apparent after going through all that, and I hope you check their website and look at some of the documents and so on. But I think it's fairly obvious that the majority, probably all, of the claims made by the likes of Robert Greene are false. Or at least, if anything was true at the beginning in an isolated form, they've completely ruined any chance of justice by making wild accusations and clouding all in these accusations and speculations. And they've been compounded and exploited by David Icke and Brian Gerrish and Belinda McKenzie for various agendas of their own. I can't say they're consciously COINTELPRO or consciously snake oil salesmen, but regardless of whether they are or not, the effect is the same. Why is it that this growing counterculture, whether it's 9/11 truth or exposing the political system or whatever, why does it always seem to initially stumble onto the right things, only for its leaders to become messiahs or egotistical douchebags or you know, the cliched conspiracy theorist? It always seems to destroy itself from the inside and make themselves, you know, it makes itself look ridiculous, so the wider public never go there. We need to get back to basics, basic facts, a basic understanding of what's going on and what can realistically be done about it. We don't need to fly off the rails talking about satanic cabals and things we can't prove. Let's stay grounded. There's a lot we can prove and a lot we can go on, but it's often, the credibility of it is often pulled away because of these figures that seem to insert themselves in the movement. And this whole Holly Gregg story is not that different from the satanic panic of the 90s that was all over US chat shows. You know, you had Geraldo Rivera supposedly doing a big investigation on primetime TV, and he went to Ozzy Osbourne to grill Ozzy Osbourne about satanic lyrics. And you had Oprah Winfrey with the Temple of Set on there to dispute allegations of ritual sacrifice. Yeah, there's a few cases of crazy people committing crime while portraying a superficial Hollywood idea of Satanism. But that kind of Satanism is really just a projection of Christianity. The substance is never there. And in the 90s, there were all these supposed experts who could help deprogram people who were satanically abused or Illuminati programmed, and they would help them out of it and go on speaking tours and go on the Christian channels and talk about it all. You know, people like Fritz Springmeier. You had the whole Kathy O'Brien transformation of America, saying she was a mind-controlled slave. And I don't know if every one of these cases is complete bollocks. I know the CIA have been involved in certain things like that. But when you hear that Robert Greene was kind of invited into some of these circles and told to sex up the satanic side of things, it's like, are we just going around the same cycle? Have we not moved on? You know, this is just a medieval witch hunt in modern form. And just on that kind of topic of the satanic ritual abuse and psychotherapists kind of coming out and speaking about it in the 90s and whatnot, there is an idea that has been put out there, and one that I think makes quite a lot of sense, is that perhaps these so-called experts and deprogrammers and therapists that are helping supposed survivors of ritual satanic abuse and so on, perhaps it's them using their knowledge of psychology to implant those very ideas into their patients. When did people suddenly start trusting wacky psychologists that talk about Satanism? Perhaps they're the ones perpetrating it. And if you go to the HollyGregCoverUp.net and read the article about Valerie Sinason and those people surrounding this Robert Greene meeting, they have ties to MPs and they have ties to Lords, and specifically they have ties to the Tavistock Institute. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations is a British charity concerned with group behaviour and organisational behaviour. Well, what was more organised and more groupthink than the Holly Gregg case? Has this all just been some crude Tavistock experiment to test how movements are made and how people can be fooled and controlled? I don't know that for a fact, but knowing how this whole case is a pack of lies and has all these links, it's something worth exploring. But we've gone about 2 hours tonight, folks, so I'm going to leave it there. Obviously, be sure to check out all the other great shows here on FTP Radio, and also be sure to check out my website, wideshut.co.uk. But that about wraps it up. From me, Keelan Balderson, I'll catch you same time, same place, next week. We are flipping the pyramid. Flipping the pyramid.